Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this Kissimmee meeting for the KUA Authority of February 2nd, 2022. If you can please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now, I would like to ask for a minute of silence for the life of Dr. George Gant. He passed away yesterday. May he rest in peace. He was an outstanding public servant. He served this community for over 25 years. Part of his serving was here at the KUA board, as a chair and as a director, and he's also the mayor of Kissimmee for some period in the 80s. May he rest in peace. And now, do I have a motion to approve today's agenda?
So moved.
Second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against it, nay. Ray, can I hear you? Let me see. Okay. Motion passed. Now we go on to awards and presentations. General Manager, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, we have several awards and presentations this afternoon. I want to begin by a degree recognition and congratulating Professor Rivera, our Executive Administrator, to the President and General Manager. She just recently received her Bachelor's of Science degree in management from the University of Phoenix. Congratulations. She's not here still.
Congratulations.
And then last month, Lowell Knowledge, our manager of support service and customer service, we were going to recognize him for 20 years of service, but he couldn't be here, but he's here today, so I want to recognize him. Lowell, would you come on up here? Next, 5-year service award for David Bowen, an instrument controls and electrical technician at Cane Island, our operations department. He's not able to be here, but David, we thank you for your years of service at KUA. Florida Valles, assistant to the Vice President of Information Technology, recognizing as a writer for 10 years of service. Thank you. Congratulations. Next, we've got a 10-year service reward for Dan Getz, our manager of accounting and finance administration. Come on up here, Dan. Did I get the Okay. 15-year service award for Russell St. John, power plant shift supervisor at Cane Island in our operations department, recognizing 15 years of service. Woo-hoo! Mr. Jim Harnoy, come on up here. Jim is our supervisor of state and communications in our operations department, recognizing him for 20 years of service at KUA. Congratulations. All right. Next, we've got got a Mr. Jay Taylor, who's not able to be here. He's a lineman first class in our operations department. We're recognizing him for 35 years of service to KUA. So,
lineman first class, huh? Congratulations.
Finally, our employee of the month for February 2022 is Lee Gonzalez, our data and telecom network administrator in our IT department. Would you come on up here, Lee? Lee, one of your employees had this to say about you. The past year provided unexpected challenges due to COVID-19, and Lee was instrumental and transitioning KUA's workforce to a complete work-from-home model, upgrading key network systems and strengthening KUA cybersecurity measures during this period. The increase in the number of KUA employees working from home required modifications to our network infrastructure and licensing requirements. We quickly secured the necessary licensing and spent a considerable amount of time after hours to accommodate KUA's new network demands. The results was a smooth transition. In the midst of the pandemic, we spent a lot of time again after hours upgrading our Cisco Unified Communication System and virtual machineware environment. These upgrades are critical to telecom's server infrastructure and will allow us to upgrade other systems in the near future. In addition to the numerous upgrades, we spearheaded a comprehensive penetration test of KUA's network in cooperation with CISA, the federal agency tasked with cyber support. This effort took a significant amount of coordination and planning and proved to be a worthwhile endeavor, helping to shore up KUA's cybersecurity posture. Both our network and phone systems are critical to KUA's mission, and Lee is reliably at the center of both of those elements. Thank you, Lee, for everything that you have done and everything that you have continued to do. Beginning with our chair, Apple Urbina.
Felicidades, Leandro.
Secretary Reagan Hill.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
There's some parking.
All right, thank you.
Director Gina Van Meter.
And one day off with pay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
But this is the actual pay.
The actual pay.
Thank you, sir. Mayor Olga Gonzalez.
Now we go on to item E, hear the audience. Is there anyone in the audience who likes to approach the board? Hearing none, we move on to consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve?
Motion to accept.
Last month, do I hear a second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Ray? No Ray? Motion approved. Information or presentations? No public hearings? There is no public hearing? Informational presentations.
Madam
General
Chair.
Manager, please.
Yes, ma'am. We've got two informational presentations for you this afternoon. The first presentation from Church and Community Assistant Program, and Tiffany Henderson, Director of Corporate Communication, is going to do the introduction here.
Good afternoon. We have with us today Pastor Dana Camacho, Executive Director of Church and Community Assistance Program. Their mission is to aid individuals and families in achieving self-sufficiency. Church and Community Assistance Program has received $10,000 in sponsorship funds from KUA in this current budget year. And now I'll turn it over to Pastor Camacho. Thank you.
First of all, I want to say thank you for inviting me to come here and speak about Church and Community Assistance Program. And we are thankful for the funds that have been provided to our nonprofit. And I just wanted to speak a little bit about what we do at Church and Community. It's originally seen as a food bank. People go there to receive food. We started off feeding families, about 20 to 25 families per day, and we're up to right now feeding 70 to 75 families per day. I'm giving them different size boxes according to the amount of family members that they have. We're not limited to that because we are a one-stop shop. So we actually, when the person comes in and does an intake at the beginning, we're active listeners and listening to what they're telling us, but also listening sometimes to what they're not telling us. And it's usually about the need that they have. If they're lacking in one area, which is in their food, usually they're lacking in many other areas. And so we try to address those areas. We're doing a lot of mental health counseling from our site. We have a partnership with Broken Wings, and they are a group of certified counselors that come in on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And regardless if they have insurance or not, the participant, they will be seen. And so we address these areas. We also have two different attorney firms that are working in our office as well, through our office, giving legal and counseling pro bono. We have an access center in our office as well, and so we're filling out for the participants get food stamps. We fill out for marketplace for insurance. We also have also with the unemployment office. So there's many things going on in our office on a daily basis. We address the homeless. They come to our office, and they also eat there on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We're giving hot lunches now, which is actually the newest thing that we've been doing. We've partnered with Career Source as well. And so Career Source has been a great blessing as well, because we're able to now pay the salary of internship level for the people that are coming in to work. And so we have our pantry workers, our associates, and we're teaching them soft skills so that later down the road they're able to get better jobs. So they have a 12-week program. We have a 12-week program that we use with them. And then if they pass that 12 weeks, then they get added on to another 12 weeks. And then after that, they should be ready to now either be hired or to get into a better position, you know, job. We help them with their resumes as well, with the way they should go dressed and all of these different things. But we do have a lot of success stories that have been happening, especially now that we've been, we've gotten the funds, especially from KUA. We've been blessed to have these funds. We have a gentleman that was actually sleeping in front of our office. He's a homeless, and we would see him there every morning. And just one day, I just decided, you know what? Let me just talk to him and see what's going on with this man. And he just needed an opportunity. He just needed someone to say, yes, come in and help us and find his purpose again. So he started working as a volunteer in our office. And then through Career Source, we were able to employ him. And he's about to sign on to a contract for an apartment. He's living now in a motel, but he's an awesome worker. And, very respectful and doesn't even question anything that we ask him to do. And he's just really, really hard worker. So this just became like a domino effect. Let's do this again and do it again. And so we have been, and through the funding that we get, to purchase the food, to keep the food bank open, actually, overflows onto all the other programs that we have available. Through our center. Right now, the last 2 weeks, we had the cold evenings, so we were able to go out, use the vehicle that we have there to go pick up the homeless and take them, transport them to either the Ramada, which was open for to shelter the homeless, or the shelters that were where would take the overflow. So these last 2 weekends, we've been working really, really hard getting these people to these places. And without the funding, we couldn't do any of these things. So we really want to say thank you. So I'm open to any questions.
I have one.
Sure.
Where are you located?
We're located in downtown Kissimmee, 10 South Orlando Avenue. If you are familiar with the courthouse area, we're right behind Susan's Cafe, which make really good potato salad, too. we're back there. We also do a truck of blessing once a month. And this last, we were doing it at, from the courthouse parking lot. They have, you know how they build the new courthouse garage? So they had a parking lot, which is the parking lot deed, which they really didn't use. So they let us use it. But the last month when we did this particular food truck of blessings, we fed 720 families in one day. So it became very disruptive to the court to have all this flow of traffic. So they've asked us to move to a different spot because they can't, you know, they can't disrupt the coming in and out of the court. So our next truck is on the 11th of February, and it's going to be in Plaza del Sol. So we continuously work in the community to continue to have this flow of food coming into the families.
Very nice.
Thank you so much.
Any other
thank
question?
You. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Good work.
Thank you. Thank you. We did have a video, but it was a little bit long. So as you said, I'd speak to you about it. But we just really, really want to thank you from the bottom of our heart because it keeps us moving and it keeps our community working and keeps our community with hope that we're going to all get through this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Now we switch gears.
second informational presentation this afternoon is our year-end audited financial report for fiscal year 21. And Mr. Kevin Crawford, Vice President of Finance and Administration, is going to handle this item. But before he does, I wanted to recognize it's his birthday today, y'all.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Thanks.
For the record, I did see my shadow, so I'd say, what, 8 more weeks of 70-degree weather? That's winter in Florida, so could be worse. But thank you very much. So before Mark White and his team come up to talk about the results of the audit results for the fiscal year ending 2021, I did want to share, as you recall, back in December, Jacob Williams was here from FMPA. And Noella Rocca from my staff came up and talked a little bit about what we were seeing in the gas market. And, you know, we were kind of just making you aware of the fact that, you know, there was a lot of pressure, upward pressure on those prices. And so as soon as we left that meeting for the month of December and into early January, we started seeing those prices retreating somewhat for a lot of various reasons. And Brian said, by the time, he goes, well, we should probably update the board on that and bring back, you know, some of that revised information. And so in the interim, from the time that we decided to do that to today, we see that the volatility of the market has gone back in the other direction. And so if you've watched the news, and I know you all do, and I won't speculate on the reasons for that. They're myriad. You know, there's geopolitical pressures, there's supply constraints, there's a lot of different factors at play, but all that to say that this market continues to be quite volatile, is sort of the bad news. But the good news is that you as the board have wisely invested in the Rate Stabilization Fund here at KUA, and you have invested us as your staff with the discretion to make those decisions to how we can utilize that rate stabilization to help our customers. And just to give you a quick recap for what we've done this year, just in the current fiscal year from October to now, we've budgeted $12.5 million in rate stabilization to utilize to offset fuel and purchase power costs for our customers. We've currently used about $8 million of that. And so that leaves us a balance of about $4.5 million to go into the rest of the year. And that's good and bad, obviously, because it's not as much as we'd want to have to use. But the good news is, well, these are our low consumption months. And as the weather tends to moderate in these spring months and the states from up north tend to decrease their consumption load, we hope that'll have a mitigating effect on the cost of natural gas, which we've shared with you is about 85% of our generation. So as those gas prices go, so goes the cost of our generation and the cost of our fuel and purchase power. And so what we hope to see is that those prices, we think, will somewhat mitigate. They are moving up again, as you watch the news today, but we don't know for how long they'll stay there or if they will retreat. But the takeaway that I wanted to share with you today before Mark came is we appreciate the board giving us the flexibility to use that rate stabilization. We monitor this every day. We speak with Brian about it every week, and we share that information with him so that we can make informed decisions on how to best help our customers in situations like this where there is a volatile market. And so I wanted to say thank you to that extent, and thank you for your confidence in us for being able to use those monies as you've seen fit. So I just wanted to encourage you with that. And I'm happy to answer any questions about that before Mark comes, but basically just wanted to share with you an update on where we were in terms of gas prices. So if there aren't any, Mark White, I will bring up, and he and Katie are here today to share the results of our 21 audit. And I don't want to steal his thunder because he's got good news to share. But suffice it to say, it was a very good, very positive audit, and I'm going to let him give you the details on all that. So thank you very much.
Good birthday present, right?
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. That is the best one you can hope for in my position. Thank you, ma'am.
At our church, we sing when you hit 90.
you got
a ways to go.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for the introduction, and good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm Mark White, and with me is Katie Eno, leadership of your audit team. Katie and myself and my partner Ron Whitesides on the financial audit side, and Michael Sandstrom, our IT audit director, who looks at IT operations. So we are here today to essentially conclude the audit process by reporting back to you, the governing board. I guess it would help if I stood up here. Sorry. The results of our audits and go over our various auditors' reports, engage in any discussion or questions that you might like, and complete your 21 audit process. So that is why I'm here and who we are. Moving on, the audit engagement, what did we do? I always like to include a slide here that gives a little something about the scope of our audit, because the word audit can mean different things to different people. There's different types of audits. We do a financial audit, which is what the Florida statutes require that all units of local government undergo annually. And the Florida Auditor General administers that statute and prescribes some of the standards that we follow. And you can see second from the bottom down there, there's an Auditor General management letter that we are required to include in our reports, which you have a copy of. We are also looking at internal control and compliance with laws and regulations that could impact your financial reporting to make sure that your control system allows everything to be captured within the financial reporting system. And then lastly, state investments statute compliance. The Auditor General, as directed by the legislature, has asked all the auditors to look at local governments, how they are investing their surplus funds, because in previous years there had been some issues with some other local governments around the state getting themselves involved with things that they probably shouldn't have. So, of course, you know, you guys we certainly wouldn't put you in that category, but the state has us look at all local governments at how they're doing that. There's a Florida statute that prescribes what you want to do if you get outside of certain safe harbors, and we're asked to compare your practices and policies to that statute and issue a report on it. And I guess I'm a little ahead of myself, but I will tell you that you guys are following the statute, and we have no concerns to report. Auditors' reports, that's what we do, auditors' reports. The things that are in there that are on our letterhead, that's the only thing that belongs to us. It is your management. Again, I said a financial audit. The primary scope of a financial audit is for the auditor to examine your financial statements and report whether we believe them to be in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, fairly stated and free of material misstatement. But it is your management that is responsible for preparation of those financial statements in accordance with GAAP. And again, our responsibility is the expression of an opinion based upon the audit work that we perform. And we are issuing an unmodified or a clean opinion, meaning we believe that your financial statements are fairly presented in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Emphasis of a matter, in the preceding year, we had a COVID-19 uncertainty paragraph in the report that has been removed at this point. A couple years ago, nobody knew what COVID-19 was going to, how it might impact financial statements. We were concerned about the collectability of receivables and those sorts of things a couple years ago, so there was some uncertainty that has now been eliminated from your report. I mentioned internal control, compliance, and compliance with laws and regulations that affect financial reporting. We're reporting no material weaknesses or significant deficiencies in internal control over financial reporting or noncompliance with matters that would affect your financial reporting. Second item there, again, we're going back to the investment policy, if you will, and you guys are in full compliance with the Florida statute on local government investments. Your management letter, the rules of the Auditor General, there were no prior audit findings. There are no findings of deteriorating financial condition or financial emergency, and we noted no noncompliance with contracts or grants, which would have an effect on the financial statements. This slide here identifies what we deem to be the more significant accounting estimates that are embodied in your financial statements, and this is disclosed in our governance letter to you, so I've identified them here. Financial statements do include accounting estimates. For example, the allowance for doubtful accounts on accounts receivable, bad debt expense, those are all accounting estimates that your management has to make, and we look at that, and we look at the basis for the estimate, and we audit that, and the standards require that all significant estimates be disclosed. So that's why this slide is in here. Pension and OPEB liabilities. Actuaries come in and calculate net pension liabilities using estimates as to the mortality of your workforce, the investment return that your plans will earn, all those kinds of things. So this slide is basically just informing you of what are the accounting estimates that are included in your financial statements. And these are all typical. None of these are unique to the authority. Adoption of new standards. There was, and y'all may remember last year, I believe I spoke to you about two standards that were upcoming, GASB 84 on fiduciary activities and GASB 87 on leases. We'll come to that in a little bit later. Leases is this new year, the 22 year. The fiduciary activities, GASB 84, was effective for your 21 year, which is what we are reporting on. And that was implemented with no changes to the existing reporting. So that was a good thing. No adjustments, no accounting adjustments proposed by your auditors. We had no disagreements with your management over the application of accounting principles and those sorts of things. And we encountered no significant difficulties in performing the audit, completing it. We did identify in our governance letter a couple of, I guess these are not new anymore, but they're still sort of new and still kind of big deals for y'all. The community solar program that the authority is participating in through FMPA became operational during 2020, the previous year.
What was that?
Oh, okay. I'll keep going. Community solar became operational during 2020, and it continues to grow as it as the project becomes fully built out. And Mayor Gonzalez, I know, is proud that the city of Kissimmee has elected to receive all of their facilities' energy service from the community solar program, which is very good. And then the second item here is no small feat whatsoever. The AMI, Advanced Metering Infrastructure Program, was completed during 21. That's a pretty big deal for any utility to bring that on. We looked at that. Our IT auditor looked at that in great deal with Mr. Gray and your IT folks, because a lot of that is technology related. And of course, all that information that those AMI meters are capturing every, what is it, 15 seconds, or how often do they read? 15 minutes, excuse me, not 15 seconds, is stored in the cloud. And at some point in time, as you accumulate enough of that, that data is going to be very useful to your organization in understanding your consumers and identifying outages and all kinds of things. So I think in the long run, completing that program and getting it fully operational will be a great asset to your organization. Turn on and turn offs, you no longer have to roll a bucket truck out to get something done like that. Let's see, this is not working right now. There we go. Our next slide here is just some selected 2021 financial observations. Just some things that we noted, just the highlights of the year, if you will. The first item there, your change in net position, which is essentially your net income number, if you can say it that way, was $18 million, up from the previous year of $7.5 million. That is because as the virus tailed off, you were able to see some growth in kilowatt-hour sales. But of equal importance, in addition to having a good, strong bottom line, you were also able to increase the funding to the rate stabilization program. That fund now, it was $50 million the year before, and it's $65 million. So you were able to add $15 million to it during 21. So as Mr. Crawford was just discussing the natural gas prices going forward, you've got those reserves to help you buffer the effect to your consumer, which is a very good position to be in. I will tell you this, we're accountants and auditors. We're not engineers, and we're not natural gas traders. But we did take a look recently at the forward curve for the price of natural gas as identified on the NYMEX exchange. And it's showing upper fours to $5 per MMBTU into the next year. So the real question I think that nobody can answer is, 5 years from now, when we look back on 2022, let's say, and 23, is the current price of natural gas just going to be a spike that came back down, or is it going to be a spike up and a plateau and become the new normal? We don't know the answer to that. Hopefully it's the blip and not the long-term trend, but there is a school of thought that suggests it might be the new normal. If our country maintains the current energy policy and environmental policies that it has, it's difficult to see that coming down. So we'll see. But the beauty is that KUA has positioned itself in a way to buffer that to your consumers. So you're in about as good a position as any utility that we know of as far as that particular issue. So that kind of covers those first two bullets or items. And then the third one, again, this is not new. I know it's been reported to you many times in the past, but your all your bonded indebtedness was paid off in the preceding years, and you are down to $33 million in commercial paper obligations as of the date of the audit report, September 30th. $10 million of that was retired on the very next day, so as we stand here today, that's down to $23 million, which is about 2 years' worth. So 2 years from now, KUA is going to be virtually debt-free unless there are some construction projects that pop up that can't be funded out of operations and those sorts of things. But I guess in our talking with management, that's probably not going to be the case, but you never know. So, again, you guys are in great, great financial position. Electric utilities are capital intensive. You can put a lot of money in the ground with pole and conductor and everything that goes with it, substations. To be virtually debt-free in an electric utility like this is almost unheard of, to be honest with you. So, I mean, that's a clear advantage for your organization. And then the last item here, again, more really good news from the 21 year. The pension plan is also included in your audit report, the defined benefit pension plan, and it increased its net position by $19 million for the year, really due to some very strong investment performance in the financial markets. And the actuaries calculate your net pension liability. And the way they do that, without getting too technical and into the weeds, but what they do is they calculate the net present value of the expected future benefits that are going to be paid from the pension plan that have been earned as of the date of the balance sheet. Okay, so they figure out what has been earned on a net present value as far as future payments to your retirees. And then they compare that number to what you have set aside in your irrevocable pension trust fund, where the monies have been set aside irrevocably for benefits to the pensioners. And the difference goes on KUA's books as a liability. So we always look at the funding ratio. We're looking at what percent of that liability do you have already funded? Well, it went up to 95% this year from 87 previously, and I think that's probably record territory for the authority as well. That's very strong, very, very strong. Now, here we are in early February. I also included the last sentence in here. The investment markets have been challenging to date. You know, December and January, the markets were not all that great. The last week or two, they've started to kind of stabilize. So, you know, a lot of that 95% is how the markets do. So we hope that this 22 year that they remain strong, and that you will be able to maintain, possibly improve that 95%. Or, you know, if the markets do pull back a little bit, the Fed's raising rates, you know, they're sort of resetting some of the price earnings ratios in the markets and things like that. Hopefully it's not too bad, and you'll still be in a very strong position. And once that reset happens, we'll be back roaring again, I suspect. So those were kind of the selected observations we had for the year. Future accounting developments that will be embodied in your financial statements, we've got a couple of slides here. Just to let you know, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, the GASB, sets the standards that all local governments must follow. When I say generally accepted accounting principles, they're the ones who say what is generally accepted accounting principles. And they are quite active. Sometimes we wish they were a little less active. But there's all kinds of new GASB statements that are being promulgated. And there's one big one here for 22, the lease accounting standards. And it basically is going to require all local governments to put all leases and or right to use of an asset, a non-financial asset, on the balance sheet as both an asset and a lease liability. right now that kind of treatment is only afforded to capital leases where you're essentially lease purchasing an item. You know, the standards say that the current standards that everybody follows, you know, one of the things is if you are leasing a piece of equipment, any kind of equipment, and the irrevocable term of that lease is at least 75% of the useful life of the asset, they're saying you're buying it. You know, let's look to the substance, not the form. And they require you to put the asset on your books as a capital asset with a corresponding lease liability. Contrast that with if you were renting some storefront just for some extra space for 2 or 3 years, that's considered an operating lease. You charge that payment to rent expense and you move on. There's no balance sheet treatment whatsoever. Well, what this new standard is doing is it's making everything a capital lease. There's exceptions. I'm generalizing. So one of the things that we've talked to your management about is going through all known lease agreements that you have and really any contractual arrangements where it involves the right to use of a non-financial asset. Doesn't have to say lease up at the top of it. Any contractual arrangement. Take an inventory of those items. Let's get the key terms and take a look at that so that we can identify, you know, what new items will end up on your balance sheet next year. And this applies to you as a lessee. In other words, most people will be implementing this where they are leasing something from someone. It does apply to you and anyone else as a lessor. And we have already, Katie and I have both done some existing research on the existing TARP agreement with FMPA because you are essentially capital leasing the 50% of Cane Island 1, 2, and 3 to FMPA. And it has always been recorded as a capital lease on your books. And we have been in touch with the GASB staff because the standard itself was not very clear. And we believe that the new standard will not change any of the accounting for the existing TARP agreement. So that I think we kind of dodged a bullet there. And we're very pleased to find that out. So right now, as best we know, it would be you as a lessee, but there could possibly be some lessor considerations as well. And there's a variety of other ones, subscription-based IT arrangements. So, you know, again, they're a right to use. They're going to put an asset on your books and a liability. So these are the things that we're looking at with your staff and trying to anticipate working into your financial statements as needed. There's a variety of other items. So what makes for a good audit? I think it's your management, your governing board, and us, your external auditors, all working together. And we receive excellent cooperation from your upper management, all the people that are in this room, and many beyond it. Everybody's very quality conscious and takes the audit very seriously. So we appreciate your management and everything that they do for you. And with that, I'll close and take any questions or comments that y'all might have.
Have a comment?
Any questions, anyone?
No, I'm just going to have a comment. Thank you for an excellent report. If any entity, any individual is going to get in trouble, it's finances, the money side of a business. And I got complete trust in our staff. I know they do an excellent job, but I'm from the old days. I believe in Ronald Reagan's philosophy, if you guys recall that. I trust, but I like to be that is
verify.
Trust but verify. I remember that.
I remember when he said that. So complete trust in our staff, no doubt. But it gives me a warm feeling when I hear it from a third party that we're doing things.
I think that should be a T-shirt for auditors. Trust
me,
right?
That's right.
So thank you, and thank you, staff, for what you do.
Yeah, excellent report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all very much. We appreciate it.
Joe still has a shelf. It says it's Joe Hostetler's podium shelf.
Old business, we don't have any new business.
Yes, Madam Chair, one item of new business. The Osceola County approached us about a co-application for an economic development grant, and here to tell us a little bit more about that is Grant Lassert, General Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening, Madam Chair and board members. And yes, we remember Trust But Verify. I wish the relationship with that part of the world was as good now as it was then. But no further ado, as Brian said, Osceola County was awarded what is described as a Build Back Better Regional Challenge Phase 1 Award for further development of its semiconductor, research and development, and manufacturing hub in Neo City. The Economic Development Agency, which I'll now refer to as the EDA, is an arm of the U.S. Department of Commerce. And with our support, KUA, under Brian's signature, sent out a letter of support for the Phase 1 grant, and Osceola was awarded $500,000 to further pursue a Phase 2 grant. And the value of that Phase 2 grant is anywhere between $25 million and $100 million. And the county is the only Florida entity that successfully made it this far with our help. How the grant would work is that it would be an 80-20% split. So if the federal government, say, awarded Osceola County $100 million, if there was a $100 million project and they got the award, the government would cover $80 million, then Osceola would have to cover the remaining $20. Because we have ownership interests in areas that are going to be developed, and let me get to that, particularly what you see there in the red line is going to be called Neovation Way, and that's going to join Neptune Road, which is at the bottom, all the way to, I think that's Neo Vista Way, which exists right now. And there's going to be a whole bunch of development around that area. In addition, the existing cold room they have right now, they're going to develop that and make it more robust. What you see in the circle there is our own Domingo Toro substation. That's something we're all very proud of that we spent $20 million on. But going back, that's the development, and that's where the bulk of the money is going to go. And we are going to install lighting facilities and a whole bunch of distribution conduit, junction boxes, related facilities to provide lighting along the road and serve development also that will go along the road. Because of that, the U.S. government says that we are, in effect, owners, partial owners of this project. By virtue of the fact that we're also a local government entity, Osceola County cannot qualify for this money unless we join the application. So we have to be a co-applicant because we are a government entity. Toho Water Authority also has to join in the application. The good news is that usually we will, you know, devote up to 30% of line extension costs. So if this was a private developer or anyone else, KUA would absorb 30% of laying all the conduit and putting the facilities in because we're going to get the business going forward. But in this case, it's very likely that Osceola County would only have to come up with 20%, and so we would cover the 20%. It's a good deal for us if they get the grant. However, I want to be very clear with the board on one thing. The federal government was very clear with us that not only do we have to join the application or the county doesn't get to apply for the money, but we are equally responsible for compliance with federal laws and regulations that apply to the grant, kind of like we're responsible with FEMA. We're alone responsible for that. A number of regulations and laws apply to the project. The biggest one's environmental. Also, prevailing wage. You have to pay a prevailing wage to people working on the project. I'm not worried about that. Wage and hour regulations, everyone's going to comply with those. Civil rights, we're all equal employment opportunity employers and take our responsibilities on that very seriously. I've had a chance to look at a comprehensive environmental assessment that was done out on the property right before the county purchased it in the mid-2000s. It used to be called the Judge property. Those of you who have been here a while would remember that. Mr. Judge was a farmer. They had a lot of agricultural operations out there. There were some what I would describe as minor, moderate environmental impacts from those operations. There had been one small fuel spill years ago, and it had been cleaned up, and the Florida Department of Environmental Protection gave a no further action letter to the property, which is basically a clean bill of health. I don't believe the county would have gone through with all the investments they've made in terms of bonds and everything else if there were a lot of environmental issues with the property. So I think the risk to the county and to us as a co-applicant is very remote. And that takes us to the recommendation. And what we're recommending, ladies and gentlemen, is that KUA go ahead and sign the co-application. You give Mr. Horton the authority to sign. That gives us a chance to keep working with the county to make sure we're comfortable with everything that's coming down the pike and with our obligations. And that we'll also report back to you on how it goes. And with that, I stand for any questions.
I have no question. Go ahead and do we need a
motion? Yes, ma'am.
I move that we approve this. We authorize this.
Great.
I second.
The question that I have is, Grant, is the period of time in which the money has to be used or the project has to be done in? Is there one?
I'm not aware of that, but I don't know if it's like within a year or two. I think we're looking at multiple years because if they got the $25 to $100 million, because the road itself I think is going to take probably several years, and then the outstanding development. Be happy to look into that and find out there's a sunset on when they have to expend the funds by.
I don't think they've really written it up yet, have they?
No, we still have a ways to go.
Oh, yeah. We don't know if there is that sunset clause.
I can tell you that preliminarily it looks like just serving Neovation Way will be approximately $1.2 million in terms of our with the electrical facilities that will have to be paid for.
So that is a project that would not be done unless this application goes forward and approved?
Yes, ma'am. Without KUA and Toho agreeing to join this, the county has no chance at the money.
So I have a motion on the table to approve, and I have a second. Everyone in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, motion approved. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Now we go into staff reports.
Yes, Madam Chair, for the last item of the afternoon, we've got Susan Postens here, Vice mm-hmm. President of Customer Service, to give us her semi-annual report.
Good afternoon. Save the best for last, right? Okay. As you know, I usually like to update you on strategic goals and where we are. So our customer satisfaction survey, Tiffany, our Director of Corporate Communications, and I met with Great Blue Research. We had our initial meeting to discuss questions and so on and so forth. And we decided that we would kind of reset our survey and do a hybrid this year. It's getting more difficult to get customers to stay on the phone for a phone survey. So it will include a phone survey and an online survey. We know that some people prefer to do things online. It will reach a wider customer base, so we're looking forward to hearing from some of our customers. Our long-term customers are often more likely to do a phone interview, so I have a feeling that the online interview we may hear from some of our shorter-term customers, which is good. The researchers have found that scores tend to drop when you add an online survey. People tend to be more critical when they aren't actually speaking to another human being. So we will see how that goes. The timeline, the survey will be done in March. The analysis will be done in April, and the results will be brought to you at the May board meeting. The next strategic goal is to complete a feasibility study for offering a surge protection program. We are in the research stage. We have identified utilities that have programs that we like, that we might like to follow their lead. We are establishing a list of questions. How do they operate it? Lessons learned. How do the customers respond? All of that, including, you know, how do you handle claims? Just everything about it. We're going to use the APPA, National Listserv, tool to go ahead and send those questions across the country and find out how other utilities are handling programs like this. But we also have some local ones that we're going to speak with and get their insight directly. And then the other one is pretty much in the same stage. It's offering financial assistance for the implementation of recommended energy conservation measures. And we don't really know what this is going to look like, but we are establishing questions to see how other utilities are doing this. Some do it through a loan. Some do it through additional rebate programs and things like that. So more to come on that, but we're in the research phase for that as well. So talk a little bit about billing and collections. We spoke last year about how we were trying to minimize the fluctuation in the number of days that are on a customer's bill. You can see that now it's between 29 and 31 days for each bill. Previously, that could be anywhere from 28 to 34 days in a bill. And AMI is the reason we can do this, because in the past, we could not get meter readings on weekends and holidays, and even sometimes weather impacted our ability to keep the number of days in the bill under control. So that's great for our customers, and we identified, along with our partners in finance, the highest consumption months being July through September. So we set up the schedule so that during those months, we stuck close to the 29 days as we could, trying to minimize the impact to our customers and give them a little relief during those highest consumption months. You can see we sent out just a few bills over a million. They were very accurate. And you can see reminder notices and final collection letters. Our in-house collections, which is when someone has a final bill that they do not pay and it's now past due, out of the customers or former customers that we've been able to reach, we've been able to get payment from 80% of those. So that means we do not send them on to the collection agency. So that's worked out to be a very, very productive effort. And then our negative net write-off, again, shows that our recoveries of bad debt were more than our new bad debt. So we are working with, the picture's not on that one. Let me go back. We are working, that's the wrong one. I'm sorry, I sent the wrong slide. We are working with our new bill print vendor, and what you're supposed to see here is a copy of our bill. It's just a mock-up, but it is all in Spanish. So we will have a Spanish bill, and we will be able to begin offering that option to our customers, depending on their preferences. We also made some minor changes to the bill, which is great. At the top of it, we put a QR code so someone could just scan it to report an outage if they happen to have their bill handy, which was great. The majority of this work is being done by IT, outside of us saying that looks pretty or we like this or we like that. And IT is doing an awesome job in getting the data to work with the new bill print vendor. Once they start testing, then customer service jumps back in to make sure that the bills are accurate. All right, abandoned property. I'm not sure that I've ever spoken to you about this, but I know you've all heard of unclaimed funds that the state is holding, and do you have any money up there, and check with the state. Well, we do this on an annual basis as well. So we are required that between 60 to 120, 120 days prior to filing a final report to the state, which is due April 30th, we start looking for customers. Now, these are refund checks that were never cashed. And you can see how many we do. So every customer that has $50 or more, we do our due diligence and we search for them. Now, they've been gone for a while. If we can get a new address, we send them a letter letting them know that there's unclaimed funds. If we find them, you can see we do reissue some of it, but still we do send quite a bit of money to the state every year in unclaimed funds. So these are just a quick update on our EV chargers. We're up to 55 of them out in the field right now that are commissioned and active. One is at Heritage Park. That one actually is one post with two plugs in it. That one is ready to be upgraded, so when we put it in, it will end up being one faster charger. It'll be one of our level two chargers, and so it will drop from 55 to 54, but we really aren't getting rid of a post. And as expected, the consumption, the usage on those is going up as we keep adding more. So I believe we mentioned that we powered all of our electric vehicle chargers through our community solar program now, which has been very well received. The city, of course, is thrilled to have those signs, and that signage has been added to all of our stations. We still have the two more fast chargers in progress and for Plaza del Sol, and we're just waiting for them to finish the infrastructure updates that they're doing at that location. And this is kind of a neat thing. It's still in the early stages, but we are partnering with the city on the Lancaster Ranch Park. And this will be completed in phases. It's probably years out, but it will include athletic fields, dog park, walking trails. Operations is already working with them. It looks as though we're going to do about 215 roadway and pedestrian pole LED lights. So KUA lighting will be out there. There will be two of the LED sign banners and possibly the cameras, which ties into our deed research. So the partnership with the city is very strong. They want to use community solar for the field house that's going to be out there, and they are going to install KUA electric vehicle chargers in the parking lots, one in each lot, with the ability to grow more. So that's exciting.
Do you know that in the 80s, Dan Lubier took me down there and showed me what they were going to be? And that was 1980.
Yes. Well, we're getting further along because we know how many lights they want, right? So that must be progress.
Where's that park located?
40 years.
It is behind, behind Pleasant Hill Elementary. Yeah.
John Young up there.
Yeah. So year-over-year comparisons of our customers and how they're doing business with us. The calls are down about 8%. The chats are down 15%. Lobby visits were up 24%, and cashier transactions were up 10%. However, they were up because in 2020 we were closed for 11 weeks. So if you look at it, it's probably pretty flat for lobby visits and down a little bit for cashier transactions. When I look at this and hear those stats, it means that customers are choosing other ways to do business with us. So there are more that are actively using our e-bill, going online to pay bills or get questions answered. That's where we are with that, which means we're meeting them where they want to be. Customer assistance, I know there's always interest in this. At the end of the fiscal year, we were at 7,209 that participated in the Roundup program. We are now at 7,310. So it continues to grow. You know, it grows and then people move, and so it drops and then it grows and then it drops. We're still fighting for that 10%, but we keep adding more customers, so the goal just keeps moving further away. You can see the payment arrangements. During that year, we made 64,008 payment arrangements trying to assist our customers, which came to a tune of $13,874,608.
Council on Aging still doing this with us?
Yeah, Council on Aging is handling the Good Neighbor Fund, yes, yes. And they also handle all of the LIHEAP funds.
That's what I thought. Susan, 64,000 is almost as much as one per customer. So
yes, it is.
My goodness.
Yes, it is. We spend a lot of time assisting our customers through tough times. So, conservation and renewables, you can see our customers are still interested in energy audits. A lot of these had to be done over the phone still. We are anxious to get into the homes and businesses so that we can help them even more. You can see community solar, the majority of that is commercial in the city. We do have 59 residential participants, some sitting in this room. And then net metering, that is continuing to grow, and you can see we have 162 in the hopper, so that just never stops. Okay. AMI in action. So this is these orders that are being completed. They represent what used to be a truck roll. So 57,104 truck rolls did not happen for disconnections and final reads and all of those. This is just so much faster for our customers. If you look at that time that it's being completed, and it used to be an average of about 30 minutes. So it's great for our customers. Our analysts, looking at the data, find customers that have high consumption, and they give that to our energy conservation specialists, who proactively reach out to our customers and tell them that we're seeing some higher consumption, and assist if the customer would like, but it gives the customer an opportunity to try to look into it and figure out the source of that change in their consumption. Reverse rotations that the analysts find from the data are typically a solar system that someone has put in that we are not aware of. And so we can go out there and work with the customer. We can make sure that it's safe for our employees and that there's no backfeed or possibility or anything like that, and get them on the net metering program. And then the high-low voltage that the analysts are identifying, we give that to the operations department, and they use it just to keep our system healthy. It's good for them to know if we're seeing anything like that. We also, as you can see from the first bullet, our AMI system is telling us about tamperings. We still continue to find some tamperings the other way when we're exchanging meters and through site inspections, but the majority of them we're finding through our AMI system. And with that, I am open for any questions.
Let me see that last one again.
I'm sorry?
Let me see that last graph again.
This one?
You found meter exchanges. What does that mean?
So when we went to exchange the meter, we found something on the meter that they were tampering with it, and not all of the consumption was being recorded properly. And so we go ahead and take care of that.
Well, are there criminal charges?
It depends. We do pursue criminal charges on if they exceed a certain, you know, amount of money.
Sure.
So, yes. And when we used to have the grow houses, that was when we were very involved with local law enforcement. We haven't had any of those in quite a while.
Yeah, they went away. One found by billing, that means that they were not paying anything?
No, what happened was the meter stopped. So, and they noticed it when they were processing the bill. And they looked into it, and they found that the meter stopped, and it was when we went to investigate, it was tampering.
Great. Good job. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Any other question?
Thank you.
Okay. Where are we? We
Your
go
attorney.
Here. Our attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Susan mentioned LIHEAP. It's a good segue to let you know the biggest thing up in Washington right now that we're watching closely with APPA is a bill that would dramatically expand the money available through LIHEAP. But the problem with the bill is that if a utility uses LIHEAP funds to keep someone's service on, they're not allowed to subsequently disconnect service if the person stops paying them. So that has lost a lot of attractiveness for a lot of us. So I have a feeling at the APPA legislative rally, I'll be talking to Congressman Soto and our two senators about that bill. We don't know what's going to happen to what's been called the Build Back Better Act. That's the bill that Senators Manchin and Sinema have indicated opposition to. There's been some talk that they're going to break it up into pieces. So it'll just depend on what those pieces look like, whether or not we and our partners at APPA will support or oppose those efforts, and I will keep you posted on that. This coming Monday and Tuesday, Mayor Gonzalez, Vice Chair Ortega, and Mr. Horton and I are heading up to Tallahassee. And there are several bills that we're going to be focusing on as we meet with our legislators. I'm happy to report that we're in favor of something for a change. That's House Bill 1287. And that bill would protect, I think I've already mentioned, a lot of cybersecurity efforts we do to protect our cybersecurity assets, how we respond and prevent attacks, what kind of insurance deductibles and coverage we might have. And it also protects information that we share with other non-municipal utilities as we comply with reliability standard regulations. So that's an excellent bill. We'll be working in favor of that. House Bill 621 is the bill that we strongly oppose, which would basically not allow the city of Kissimmee to take money from the state of Florida in terms of transportation grants or anything else if they don't use all of the general fund transfer from us and put it back in utilities. So the city would not be allowed to do the great investments they've done for our parks and our services and everything else that benefit our community so much. That still hasn't been scheduled for a committee hearing. It has four committee assignments, so we're going to oppose it, but hopefully we'll continue to have success against that. Another bill that's moving very quickly that we're not in favor of is House Bill 619. What that bill does is it requires KUA and other municipal electric utilities to purchase all electric distribution and substation equipment from manufacturers in the United States when it comes to steel or iron that is used in this equipment. So that will really limit potentially what we can do in terms of competing for the best price. It doesn't come at a good time given all the supply constraints that we're dealing with right now, the supply chain bottlenecks. However, it is supported almost unanimously by the powers that be in Tallahassee, so I have a feeling that we'll be just having to deal with this. But that's moving quickly, and that's...
I think the public would agree with that, too. I think there's a sentiment in the country now to stay within the country and locally. It's just... Unfortunately, but it's there.
I totally agree. And I think a lot of this is directed potentially towards the People's Republic of China, but they're bringing in Europe and South America and everyone else.
All sorts of things that are going on in the world today. It's very upsetting to everybody.
It is. And so we'll adjust, you know, and there are some exceptions. Like if the price is going to be a certain level more than if you went to a foreign competitor, or if there's no availability, then you have exceptions, and we'll look at those carefully. But I do think it's likely to become law.
Do you think maybe they'll just pull out our enemies that oppose us and leave in our friends?
I wish they would.
I was just wondering if they could go that way.
It's a great suggestion, and because, for example, I think that if it's a foreign company, but it's made with U.S. steel, if it's made here, I think that we're okay. So, for example, if we had a manufacturer like Siemens, and they have a factory in the United States, which makes it, and it's with U.S. steel, I have a feeling that we would be fine. But we just hate to be limited. You know, it makes sense that there's concern about predatory trade practices from China and others that aren't friendly towards us. And it's worth raising that, so we'll do it.
Well, I think people would understand that.
Absolutely. You know, we're not trying to...
Not if they use power.
Yeah, it sure is.
If they use power, they don't want China interfering with our system. So.
Yeah, you saw the 5G company, pronounced Way. I apologize if I mispronounce it, but...
Right.
Yeah, you know, people were concerned that... that company would enable the Chinese government to get access to sensitive communications in the U.S. So appreciate the concern. There's really, I think everybody's on the same page in terms of the concern. It's just how I wish it was more narrow, like you're pointing out. But we'll talk about it, absolutely talk about it, and suggest it. And then the last bill that's one of concern is Senate Bill 828, and it underwent a complete transformation yesterday. The bill sponsor basically tore his original bill up and put something brand new in. What the original bill did is it required both private and government agencies, anyone that has what's called cyber assets, to undertake even more efforts to protect them. They've carved out now the private sector. I'm not surprised. It was applying to almost everyone. But it still applies to us. And what it does is it requires us to comply with very specific standards as regards industrial automation type technology. And what I think about there in systems operation, I think about our own system operation, our SCADA system, which operates our transmission and distribution assets. And the argument we're making and that FMEA is making as we speak is that we're already subject to cyber infrastructure protection reliability standards of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, who has $1 million a day fining authority if we don't comply. We're subject to stringent regulations. Our IT department's dealing with this every day. We partner with CISA to vulnerability test. We should be carved out of this. You want to go after other folks that, you know, need to really take a serious look at what they're doing, that's fine, but we've got this. So we'll be making that argument. And that's all I have for now, unless there's questions.
Thank you. And I think Grant's going to, for those of us that are going to Tallahassee, our general counsel is going to summarize all of these issues for us before our trip.
Yes, sir.
Afternoon. Yeah. Other than that, there are your reminders. I will note that some of the activities on March the 9th may move, but I'll let you know as we get closer. Okay.
Directors, right? Any comments, any questions?
No questions, but I did want to alert everybody. I'm hopeful that each of the board members got a email from FMPA regarding a speaker that they're having for the policymakers meeting on the 20th of April. And I don't remember if you have to actually register for it, or I know they did send a link, but the gentleman that's going to be speaking is a well-known person on climate control.
Excellent.
So please take advantage of that if that's an interest to you.
Manny, any comments, questions? Jeannie?
I will not be here in March. I happen to have surgery on the other knee, March 8th, so I will be recuperating.
Jeannie. Mayor, no comments or questions? Well, thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful Valentine's Day coming up. Meeting adjourned.